Well, for like the fifth time today, I almost preempted the big voice guy, but didn't because I'm nailing it. Matt Gurney here, Richard Gross is with me. Time for smart speakers. Lots to talk about today. We've got some great people to talk about it with. Lindsay Broadhead is here, Strategic Communications and Public Affairs Advisor, and Genevieve Tomney as well, Vice President, Public Affairs at Proof Strategies. Guys, we hate starting on this. We don't like talking about this, and I'm not sure either of you are going to have a ton of wisdom on this, but it is the top story of the day. Lindsay, we'll come to you first on this. Based on everything we're hearing out of Laval, where two kids have been killed and six others injured, we don't know for sure yet what happened, but every indication is that this bus that drove into a daycare, it was deliberate. No idea about motive, but it's getting harder and harder to say it wasn't deliberate. The police have laid murder charges.
It is, you know, what can one say? It's every parent's absolute worst nightmare. It's any community's worst nightmare. And it's the unthinkable, right? I live on the Danforth where, you know, there were shootings and we've heard of, vans driving up the road aiming at women. Mm-hmm. We hear about these things not all the time, but too frequently. And, you know, layered on by violence on transportation, on our transportation systems, mental health issues, like all of these issues converge. But nothing makes any of it rational when it has to do with children as a target. It's utterly irrational. That's all really I have to add, is that it's just this confluence of all the issues that we face, we listen to, we talk about, we read about, and it's utterly heartbreaking because there's no way to address it at all other than just, you know, pray if that's what you do, or acknowledge just extreme sadness for these people.
Genevieve, do you think that things like this are just highlighting this sense of unease that we all seem to be feeling, that there are random actions at the top of the news cycle every single day now, whether it's on the TTC, this absolutely heartbreaking and horrible story out of Quebec? And I just feel like it's implanting in us this unease that is going to come to be the thing that maybe defines our era.
Yeah, I know. I think unease and uncertainty is a great way of describing it. And I think that, you know, the last thing you want is for people to become immune to hearing about these kind of horrific things that are happening. I mean, it is horrific. It's actually unimaginable because, I have two little kids and you leave your children with caregivers or daycare at school every day knowing that, you know, part of your and your body is just out there in the mm-hmm. world, and hopefully it's safe, and it's just unimaginable. And I mean, I couldn't even, it's hard for me to even read the articles being so close to those daycare years myself. And your heart just goes out to the parents who are just dealing with the unthinkable right now. But I think, you know, you do touch on something, and it's you know, an unease and an uncertainty that we're all living with right now. And that has just been compounded since we all have gone through the pandemic. And I think that it's really difficult for a lot of people right now. And Lindsay rightly mentions things like mental health care, but I think it's so important for everybody. And I think about the journalists and the first responders who are involved in what's happening right now too. And I just, you know, we just really need to care for each other.
I saw, Lindsay, a photo today, and Genevieve, it's kind of you to remember the journalists, because I can't even tell you the stuff that's in my brain forever that I really would prefer is not there. I was rarely in the field. Like I manned a desk most of my career, but even just looking at the photos that would come back unfiltered, these things get into your head. And I was, Lindsay, I was looking at a photo from the scene in Laval today. It was a firefighter. The police had set up a perimeter. They'd moved everybody back. They had a command post. They were doing their usual excellent work. And a firefighter had been helping get some of the kids out of the rubble of the building, which has been heavily damaged, as you can imagine. And he was carrying a little girl, I think, but it's hard to tell under that massive snowsuit, because you remember at that age how they vanish into their snowsuit so completely. And he was bringing the child out to its parents. And that look on his face is a look that I recognize, and I know I've had that same look myself sometimes, which is just a very controlled neutrality, where it's just complete professionalism, and the horrors he must have seen to look that neutral told me a lot.
Yeah, and I imagine folks who are experts in PTSD could say a lot about that, right? Mm-hmm. You don't necessarily react, especially if you're trained in the moment. But I believe that firefighter is, you know, will have very human reactions to it later on, as will anyone who has seen that. And it's, you know, it's interesting because, you know, Richard, I think you're hitting on a really who asked the question before, I think, around, you know, is this starting to define mm-hmm. us? And then, yep. Jenna, you said, you know, that we hope that we don't become immune to this. But at the same time, it's that fine middle ground, because I also hope that we don't start to, you know, it becomes us, mm-hmm. or, you know, we go the other extreme where we're constantly seeing, you know, tragedy and random incidents around every corner. And that's almost where I think we are right now with the uncontrollable nature of the pandemic, the news cycle, I think in our downtown Toronto communities, but now, you know, in any urban community, there's a series of unknowables that get into the zeitgeist. And I know it's a pretentious word. I just don't know another one.
It's an accurate word.
Get into the mindset. And we become these things. And that is almost more scary to me. I don't want my kids to be paranoid. You know, I don't want to live a paranoid life. I want to find ways to be free and get them to run and feel safe, you know, on various modes of transit or within my community. So I hope that this is just utterly random. But as you, you know, rightly analyze the details coming from the news cycle right now, it sounds like it's not.
Well, I think that the unease is both, you know, a symptom or the violence is a symptom of the unease as much as it is creating the unease. And I think that the more
100%.
That we have this feeling that anything could happen, the more people are driven to do terrible things. And I think we're seeing it. We're seeing it on the subway. We saw it on the Danforth last weekend. There was a terrible hit and run on the Danforth last weekend at Woodbine. It just feels to me like every time I turn around, there's something awful happening. And it's making me think twice about the way that I live my life. And I really hope that doesn't continue.
I think, it's a hard topic to shift over to, but Genevieve, we want to come to you on this one, and Lindsay, we might not get to you on the other side here, but it will be the same topic. Genevieve, there had been this talk today about whether or not the Conservatives would align themselves with the healthcare deal that had been announced yesterday. We didn't have to wait long. Pierre Poilievre today, in a scrum, basically, you know, he layered on all the usual criticisms of the Liberals, but he went out of his way to stress that a Conservative government, with him as Prime Minister, would honor and uphold the deals that are being negotiated right now between Ottawa and the provinces and territories.
Yeah, and I mean, is this the first thing the Prime Minister and Mr. Poilievre have ever agreed on? I would like to get a show of hands on that. But look, I mean, I think it's impossible to ignore the crisis that's happening in healthcare across Canada right now. And look, I think there are two things that are fundamentally true in this announcement. One is that we cannot improve care across our country without more resources. How can you argue with that? The second thing, and this is where they maybe quibble a little bit, is that, you know, the federal government should absolutely have some say over how those resources are allocated. You know, it doesn't mean that there's a one-size-fits-all approach to every province, but from what I can see, that's not what the federal government is saying here. They're talking about bilateral agreements that will allow for some tailoring to happen. But one of the things that, you know, stands out to me and the analogy that I make is like, if my kid spent his allowance on candy and then asked for more money because he actually needed new crayons, then I would sure as heck make sure that he went out and bought crayons with the additional money. And so I think, you know, there's an element of insurance here that's really important in terms of building trust with Canadians as well, because if they're going to see these astronomical amounts of money being dedicated towards fixing healthcare, then it sure as heck better get fixed.
We have to leave it there. We'll be back on the other side of the break with more smart speakers, Lindsay Broadhead and Genevieve Tomney. Stay with us.
It's 4:45 News Talk 1010, Time Saver Driving. Thanks for being here with us, guys. Matt Gurney here. Richard Krause is with me. It is the Smart Speakers. Genevieve Tomney is here with us as well. So is Lindsay Broadhead. Lindsay, we're going to pick up the conversation right where we left off. Genevieve was having her thoughts about the fact that Pierre Poilievre in comments today, you know, gushied it up with all the usual pot shots at Justin Trudeau and the Liberals. But when you stripped all the usual politics away, at the crux of it, the Conservatives are pledging to match and honor any healthcare deal the federal government reaches with the provinces and territories.
Yeah, and I guess I'll just take it in a different point of view, maybe through the political comms lens. I wonder if it also has to do with the fact that, you know, healthcare isn't typically a conservative core issue. So I'm not sure how much added nuance or intelligence he could have added to what was relatively, a use as you will distribution of money to the provinces. But maybe even more cynically, if he had agreed, it would have kept the news cycle going on what could be actually a rather positive story for the federal Liberals. And right now with bail reform and, issues on who Trudeau is bringing onto his team in Quebec, amongst other issues, especially around economics and pocketbook related issues, I'm wondering if their strategy is actually to keep it closer to a 24-hour news cycle.
Genevieve, I'm going to switch things up a little bit here. One of the stories that we sent around to you guys was about the shrink-wrapped mailboxes. If you live downtown, you see essentially three kinds of mailboxes. Ones that look perfectly functional, ones that have had the drawer, that front drawer, kind of pulled out of them by people vandalizing them, and then others that are shrink-wrapped. And there are more and more and more of these shrink-wrapped ones around. So somebody asked Jack Lakey, why are these things being shrink-wrapped so we can't use them? And it's because they get damaged somehow, and they want to make sure that people don't use them, try and mail stuff in them in a box that is unusable. But I think that this leads to larger problems. I don't use mailboxes very often, but I know a lot of older people do. I live in a building that has a lot of older people, and I see people going to the local mailbox, and it's either gone, it's shrink-wrapped, and I'm thinking, can you not, instead of shrink-wrapping these things, can you not just replace it? They must have a storeroom full of them somewhere. What's your take on this?
Can I start by saying God bless the fixer? I mean, honestly, can we just take a moment for the importance of local newspapers, mm-hmm. right? Because who else is doing this? Who else is asking these questions? Go buy a newspaper.
Yep.
He kind of ended.
Or get a subscription to the Line.
Or get a subscription online, yes.
Thank you.
But he kind of ended it by saying that the answers that came from Canada Post seemed a little suspect. And and I think about, I come from New Brunswick, from, kind of a more rural part of the country. And I know that increasingly what they're also doing is they're, stopping that kind of door-to-door right. mail delivery, those boxes that you see along the side of the road in the country. And they're, making, in a lot of cases, you mentioned seniors, travel a greater distance to just be able to go and pick up their mail. And some of them have mobility issues. Maybe they can't drive a car anymore. And so for me, it's like, it was one of those things that, made communities really livable, having those boxes and the access to those boxes. And I think that, if we are trying to continue to do that and continue to find ways to make cities and communities better for people, then I just think it's one of those things that, maybe people think that won't be noticed, but really does make a huge impact in in the lives of a lot of people.
Lindsay, maybe this is a bit of rose-colored glasses here. I try not to be that kind of guy, but maybe there's a bit of this here. But I seem to remember as a kid growing up in Richmond Hill and then moving down into Toronto, mailboxes were not hard to find. It seemed like there was one, maybe not on every corner, but there were an awful lot of them. I can think of two in my neighborhood now. You know, Genevieve there just mentioning growing up in more of a rural area. I can understand isolated mailboxes in that context. Why are they so hard to find in Leaside?
And well, it's funny. I grew up not in that exact same area, but very similar. And they were on every corner. Mm-hmm. You know, your parents would give you mail and you'd go mail it for them. And those kind of stories, there's an element of nostalgia about it. It's the same as like a phone booth. How I feel about tapes,
right.
You know, like maybe this is a lot of my posts now because we're buying online is coming to my front door. I don't know if that's the most efficient way for it all to work, but I'm not mailing things out. And I haven't, frankly, in a very long time. So maybe this is a slow and early indication of a type of service that is going to alter even more than we're seeing right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's probably what we're seeing here. Recently at my condo building, we had our mail guy go on vacation for a couple of months. And the next person that came in said, yep, I don't like the lock on your mail room, so I'm not going to deliver mail. And we didn't have mail for 9 days. And I will tell you, it was an uproar in the building. And even though my mail is usually only flyers and something from a real estate agent that sold us something 11 years ago, but people were, you know, upset in a very big way. But I think you're probably right. I think we're seeing this slow decay of a once great system, and they're just doing it gradually so that we won't really notice it when it becomes very difficult to hand mail a letter.
Yeah, Genevieve, I'm prepared to accept a lot in life, but like when I pop a letter into a slot, I want it to get where it's going.
Yep.
And just like, I don't have to do a lot of this these days. It is, I will say this, the post office does seem to be more or less doing the job that it's supposed to do. I just wish I didn't have to walk a mile out of my way to find a box.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's right. I think the convenience factor is huge here. And I do think the world is changing. Most things have gone digital, but it's one of those things that, you know, when you have to do it, you want to be able to do it easily. And I think it's what people expect. And again, you know, going back to you know, trust in Canadian institutions, it's when institutions do what they say they're going to do and they provide the service that they say they're going to provide. And that's what builds trust. And I think that, you know, Canada Post has probably seen some issues over the last several years when it comes to, you know, really winning the trust of Canadians. But I think that's just such a basic, easy way of doing it.
Well, as always, guys, our smart speakers living up to the reputation. Genevieve Tomney from Proof, and also Lindsay Broadhead as well, expert in communications and messaging. Great to have them both here on the show. When we come back in just a couple of minutes, we'll kick that last hour of the show off. We're going to recap the big story of the day. It's an unpleasant one, but we'll bring you all that we know about it, get you caught up to speed. Matt Gurney here, Richard Krause with me. This will be our last hour. The first 3 hours flew by.
They did fly by. And this last hour is going to go by at the speed of light once Robert Benzi joins us a little bit later on in the show.
The Rush, News Talk 1010.